Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a chance to look at health and nutrition in our modern world. Joining me in this quest for knowledge are my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Well, good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
This morning, I had a flashback to the days of my youth.
Locked up women and children.
Exactly. Just over a week ago, my stepson Joey celebrated his 21st birthday. Unfortunately, he couldn't enjoy it to the full because of his work schedule and the bad economic situation. So anyway, this morning I stumble out of bed, put on a pot of coffee, and sat at my computer checking the war zone, known euphemistically as my inbox. There was this noise at the door. It was clearly someone with a key. And in walked Joey, waving a new T-shirt with the slogan, I can't remember the exact words, but it was something like, "I'll have another beer."
My kind of guy.
Manny, do you remember those halcyon days?
Oh, do I ever. I long for them. I just long for them. When beer was the ultimate spiritual leader of your life, yes.
I want to drink beer now, though, because of the GMO that's in it.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with Budweiser.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but I never drank Bud. I still refer to it as that college euphemism, if you know what it is.
Yeah.
I think somebody forgot what beer was when they went to, you know, all these genetically modified foods and stuff in their beer. I mean, is it anything sacred?
No, but on the euphemism, and this is an absolutely true story. When I was living in San Diego, one of our little hangout joints was a Japanese restaurant, and it was a very nice Japanese restaurant. And they had a small bar area, and three or four of us would drop by after work for a cool one, and the lady behind the counter was most definitely Japanese, without a great command of the English language, and she got to know us, and she would just say, "Four butt wipers."
Oh boy, that's when it's definitely fun to misspeaking. One of the things I enjoy about the television show NCIS is the malaprops by the Israeli character and the misspeaking of American colloquialisms. So it cracks me up. Kind of reminds me of Henny Youngman and Rodney Dangerfield at their best. But so I have a quick story before we get going today too. Simon, we've shared with you that we've gone through our mini warehouse for the last 2 weeks, and this is a story for every American who has things in storage. Ash and I have been, it's no secret, we've been in poor health off and on, so we wrote these books and recovered, and, you know, because of my health, I'd put off going in there for a number of years, and Ashley too. Well, we cleaned it out. It was 40 by 20 stacked to the ceiling. I found things going back to, probably the early 60s. I found my original tickets to the world premiere of It's a Mad, Mad World, huge ones. And guess what the price was for this huge charity showing of Mad, Mad World at the original Cinerama Dome in Hollywood? $2.50.
That's fantastic.
I think it was probably November, December of 1963. $2.50. Oh, my God. And it was invitation only with seat numbers, you know, like you were going to the theater. Isn't that amazing? And I want to put the world to rest. We did find Jimmy Hoffa among some old Playboy magazines. We have finally found him.
As soon as we wrap this program up, I'm going to call our good friend Denny Griffin and tell him that we have located Jimmy Hoffa.
And Danny, if you're listening, maybe you'll finally invite me on Crime Wire, and I can tell how I didn't even have to break up the cement. He wasn't even in the cement. He was just hiding behind a magazine. So I'm going to continue today with another funny story that probably isn't funny at all. And anyone who saw Michelle Bachmann's tirade over the regulation of the meat industry has to laugh. I mean, here's this conservative candidate. We've just had all these people who are sick on E. coli. Ashley and the rest of them are going to come back a little bit to Listeria. We got 16 dead there. We got all of this. So the FDA says, you know, we got to be very careful. Along with the CDC and the USDA, decide they're going to group six more disease-causing E. coli and other adulterants in the illegal-to-sell list. And they're going to start checking meat for six more forms of E. coli adulterants. So what does Michelle Bachmann say? Michelle Bachmann says, and by the way, this targets approximately 113,000 illnesses, 300 hospitalizations annually in the U.S. for these forms of E. coli. They don't even check on.
Just those strains alone, just a few little strains, six of them.
So in a sense, Michelle Bachmann, probably standing in a soapbox because she's so short, says, we are stuck with this. We're into the anti-regulatory, anti-Washington. And she toured an actual beef plant where they were carving up ribeye steaks in a cute little dress and, of course, open-toed sandals and a wide variety of nice things. Of course, she had her pearls on, so she looked good for the camera.
Now, there's nothing better than walking in your pumps, in open hot heels pumps, you know, through a factory filled with beef.
So here she is standing in entrails and all the other stuff looking real.
Slaughterhouse.
Yeah. You know, what the article didn't say, and I want to know, was she wearing Jimmy Choo's? Because any self-respecting woman would wear Jimmy Choo's to a meatpacking factory to make sure she looked hot to those guys in those blood-soaked white outfits. So what does she say? Is Washington helping or is Washington hurting? What we've heard today from this meat market here in Iowa is that Washington is hurting. It's no longer helping. You mean, oh, my God, they can't sell their E. coli-ridden food? Oh, and then she points to binder paperwork and she says, I believe the federal requirements are overkill and hamper small business growth. But she's standing in this giant factory farm meatpacking thing run by one of four or five of the nation's largest meatpackers. And she's going, small business people are hurt. Could someone explain that to me? And then she goes on standing there, and, of course, she was probably lifting her leg to try and keep the animal blood off her Jimmy Choo's.
Got to scrape them off
the
toes.
Yeah, ruined
Gotta get that E. coli off those toes.
Ruined her nail polish. You know? And she goes, now government has gotten in and made it almost impossible to be able to create a profit anymore in this business. I guess if you can't sell your E. coli-laced beef, you're not going to make any money. Gee, isn't that terrible, Simon?
Oh, it is, but, you know, it's also hugely amusing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, do you know what one author suggested when I read all these newspaper articles? He said maybe she should read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, which, you know, we wrote about in our book. And mm-hmm. I agree with her. I mean, anyone who's read that book in high school or college can look around the meat industry, and it's fastly approaching the danger days of the jungle.
Oh, yes.
You know, and by the way, one of the observers said she had no hair in that or hard hat. She had jewelry on, and I mean, this went through the whole thing. Safety, hygiene, you know, like what is she doing there? I mean, she could potentially track stuff and potentially contaminate the meat, because, you know, in the words of that famous Ohio politician, Annette Sweeney, or how I got paid for major corporations to be as dumb as my animals.
Well, you did not just say that.
Yeah, I did. She's as dumb as some of her animals.
Well, she deserves it with what's happened with the photographs.
But she pointed out that we can't let any of these whistleblowers in because they could cause a hazard, because you need a hazmat suit to be in our place. So, but it's okay. Michelle Bachmann goes in her Jimmy Choo's, right?
Oh, Lord, give me strength.
You know, and the center of our topic today is deceit among the industry and tests. And before we jump into the big deceit, I want to cover something Ashley put in front of me, celiac disease. Now, there's an article out I read in one of these anti-homeopathic articles that Ashley sent me about how they want to require everybody to take an enzyme drug and not natural enzymes. And for anybody who has read our books, Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, which saved my life and a number of friends of mine, are based on your body being refreshed with natural enzymes. And for listeners who don't understand this, your body produces about 50,000 enzymes, only about 20,000 are identified, and everything you do, waking, sleeping, sex, everything, is controlled by the enzymes in
reproduction,
your body.
Everything.
Reproduction,
right.
Everything. And enzymes you're born with, and what happens is, like money in the bank, we all run out of it as we get older, and there's no natural way to replenish them other than to take natural enzymes. Probably the best is bromelain. It's so natural, it comes from the root of the pineapple. Not even the fruit, but the root. So what do they say? Oh, don't take any of those things. They don't work. Wait until we create a drug that's an enzyme that works, okay? So here we are saying with that classic industry statement, don't take anything natural. Let's shoot you up with drugs. Isn't that amazing, Simon?
Natural's just bad for you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it came off the tree. Oh, my gosh, it doesn't have pesticides in it. I don't know if I can eat it.
You know, and Ashley's pointed out that one out of 200, this doctor admitted that one out of 200 people have problems with gluten that they don't even know about. And, you know, gluten has gone from, what, 1 in 100,000 to 1 in what? What is it?
Well, some doctors are actually warning 1 in 100 is what they're saying.
Yeah.
And you're right. It wasn't basically hardly heard of at all with the celiac disease, and then they came up with this new celiac thing.
Yeah. So now it's sort of like it was with blood pressure. Don't take Chinese red yeast white or rice. Wait till we invent Lipitor. And that's the way they work. Right.
Right.
Actually,
what really bothers me about celiac disease is when you look at it and it says to you, it's a dangerous condition in which the body's immune system attacks the gluten proteins. And then it gives you symptoms, headache, fatigue, fibromyalgia, autism. But it is the exact same, if you go read the definition for intolerance of foods, you will come up with the same kind of immune response against the foods.
Right.
So they've instead said, oh, we're going to give it a new name, and it's going to strictly be against this protein. And if you eliminate that particular toxic ingredient, we thought you had celiac disease, Manny, for a long time.
Right.
And it turned out that you eat bread now, and it turns out that it wasn't celiac disease. It was all the toxins within the bread itself.
Well, I'm not sure that gluten still isn't a problem. But the difference is between I don't have a problem with organic flours, and I have a problem with genetically modified wheat, corn flour, and the other one. So this is my favorite. This is a University of Chicago Celiac Disease Center, talking about why you shouldn't take enzymes. The amount of gluten that these enzymes would be able to digest is ridiculously low. For people with celiac disease, these are something to completely avoid. Excuse me? Yeah, there are probably thousands of tests from Hermann Emil Fischer in the 1880s through Wobbizon, which is probably the top,
ninth
best-selling drug in Germany for the last 70 years of enzymes. And, you know, by the way, Dr. Fischer won the Nobel Prize for the theories, and a lot of the theories in our book, and here they are saying that a Nobel Prize winner is an idiot. Of course, these guys probably never heard of Dr. Emil Fischer, you know, Hermann Emil Fischer. He was probably beyond their study of things because they're just denying everything that he and everyone that followed him proved him. And how important is Dr. Fischer? There are 10 tests that doctors and labs follow that are named after him. He's the father of organic chemistry. You know, he wrote the textbook, the Albert Einstein of chemistry. Any comments about that, Ashley? You're looking at me.
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm just sitting here nodding and agreeing with the entire thing because one of the things that the enzymes will do is bring down inflammation in the body, which is swelling. It will bring down and allow you to actually utilize what you're putting into your body, so it's going to reduce the problems that you have with immunity. So, you know, it's a great thing, enzymes.
And these are the other ones. So this is what this doctor in the celiac disease group say. Pharmaceutical companies are currently spending hundreds of millions of dollars to develop an enzyme-based drug that can allow people with celiac disease to eat gluten. However, he adds, if over-the-counter products already did the job, companies wouldn't be investing such big bucks to reinvent the wheel. That's nonsense. They don't want to reinvent the wheel. They want to corner the market.
Exactly. So they're telling everybody, avoid gluten if you have celiac disease.
They're saying avoid enzymes.
And avoid enzymes until we have this drug that we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on, and then you can eat your gluten because then we've got the drug that we can sell you. I mean, isn't that kind of what that article is saying?
Well, it's absolutely what they're saying. And, you know, and it goes back to, as I said, Lipitor and a wide variety of drugs. And basically, Simon, as we point out in their book, there are about 432 drugs from Zantac all the way down the line. That little purple Nexium pill, it's a synthetic version of bromelain and other natural enzymes. And that's all they are. So you can go buy this for 20-some dollars, 100 pills in the in a health food store, and then 100 pills of what the pharmaceutical company sells you will cost you $60 to $80.
Oh, we'll just buy generic.
Oh.
Got to have more chemicals.
To me, generic is bromelain straight from the root of the pineapple, not some garbage made, you know, somewhere around. And
straight organic.
Yeah, and it even comes back to these Listeria discussions about the Camlope recalls that no one's telling us about. I don't want to give a shout out to Charlie McWhirter, who had her gallbladder removed last week. She made the mistake of eating a Jack in the Box, and it put her in the hospital, and she nearly died from a taco. So here she is. She listens to our show. She listens to Ashley's speech about cantaloupe and everything else. So what do you think they served her the next morning for breakfast, Ashley?
No, they didn't. They did not give her a cantaloupe.
They gave her a cantaloupe. So she sent me a note on the Facebook going, wow, they served me a cantaloupe. I looked at it and I said, not for me, and she sent it back.
Good for you.
So, Charlie, thanks for listening to us, and thanks for letting me know that they're still serving cantaloupe in a hospital to people who are ill that could be contaminated with E. coli.
Well, the government's been working hard to try to get bans removed for certain places of cantaloupe to try to get that pushed in so that people can eat cantaloupe, and I still wouldn't trust it.
So, Simon, did you have cantaloupe for breakfast this morning?
No, I skillfully avoided it.
Yeah. Have you seen any news in the market saying, are them removing cantaloupe? No. The answer is, we didn't get any of those.
Right.
As the woman in aisle 4-4 is choking and going down to the floor, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, no, we don't have that problem. Go ahead.
Earlier this morning, I was checking the news, and guess what? Listeria hysteria has now hit lettuce.
Yeah, I heard that. You know, we've had the problem in California for about a week. It's been clear that it's part of the lettuce, and they even cited the names of the company that we called it from. And again, I never saw it in anything other than local newspapers, and it never really hit the media. The same way, have you seen anything about the cantaloupe since we discussed it the other day?
Oh, no. I mean, that's old news. You know,
oh, yeah.
A few people died, but, you know, the good news is cantaloupe has a relatively short shelf life. Yeah. So,
so does Listeria.
Listeria has a long incubation period.
I know, but it'll shorten your shelf life.
Absolutely.
And what gets, you know, Simon, look at this one. There have been 16 deaths from Listeria. Can you imagine if we had 16 deaths on our highway in the last week?
Caused by a car.
Car accidents, deaths, people being killed. I don't care whether it's Mississippi or California. It would be on the evening news. And in California, VW rolls over on the 405 freeway. They have to shut it down, and it's major news in this city. But, you know, 16 people could follow over from Listeria deaths, as long as they can sweep them up and it doesn't slow down traffic, you wouldn't hear about it on the news.
Right.
And what's troublesome to me is the fact that some of them aren't marked. So even though they pulled 1.5 million cantaloupes, the entire 2011 harvest from this Jensen Farms, you still, some of them aren't marked. So let's see. I don't know. I've never played Russian roulette with a cantaloupe. I don't think I'm going to start now either. I'm advising everybody I know to not eat it because cantaloupes, you just don't know which one's got it.
And we don't know when the problem's going to go away because Listeria is in the field, so we don't know whether the next crop coming out isn't going to be contaminated by the same guy who contaminated this one, the same mishandling in the same warehouse, or the same problem, or the field next door because they do such a shoddy job of policing all this. Right, Simon?
Right. In fact, I read an article. I can't remember which news organization it was. Could have been CNN. They interviewed the owner of Jensen Farms, and he's kind of in shock and horror.
Oh, yeah,
and basically, he said, "Look, I don't understand. I don't understand how this could have happened." No one has any answers. And as I understand it, Listeria is often carried by animals. And is it possible that, you know, it came from some, you know, farm animals straying into the fields? Who knows?
How about water runoff? That's another cause. I mean, there are a million causes.
Absolutely, especially with the factory farms, Dan.
And, right, and how about particulates in the air from a factory farm even a mile away where the wind blows it? The particulates that come out of those horrible factory farms could easily contaminate other people. But let's talk about the bigger picture for a moment. As industry has taken over our food sources, as factory farmed animals have increased, as genetically modified foods and these massive farms have increased, and we're consuming the American farmer and eliminating him. As they've done this, there's been a direct increase in all of these problems, E. coli, Listeria, intestinal bugs in humans, you name it.
Antibiotic resistance, super weeds, right.
You name it. So at the end of the day, the problem becomes the industry is so out of control, it is contaminating everything it gets near. That is the biggest problem. So,
do you know that Listeria is such a terrible strain that the researchers decided that they were going to actually use it as a cancer vaccine to take advantage of the ability to induce potent innate and adaptive immunity?
Oh, they have a great ad, honey.
I mean, give me a break. This is such a potent, horrible thing.
You know, honey, their media guy had a great ad. If the cancer don't get you, we will.
Oh, my gosh. And it's ongoing right now with this foodborne thing, as we were saying, with this 10 more cases and 2 more states now have the Salmonella Heidelberg from the cargo ground turkey. I won't touch the ground turkey in the market. I mean, I do organic anyway. We do organic. And for people to even go out and think, I'm going to have a safe turkey burger. Well, I'm sorry. If you have to cook the hell out of your burger in order to make it edible, there's something wrong with that burger.
You know,
and this one's an antibiotic resistance, and they're still not sure if the heat is going to fully kill it.
You know, it's funny. I had a lady say to me in Whole Foods, I don't know why you're buying organic. What's the big deal? And I said, you have been looking at this problem with Cargill and all these other people, contaminated turkey burger and stuff. She said, what do you think the real risk is? I looked down. She had a child about 3 years old.
Oh, my
old,
gosh.
And I said to her, so what are you going to say if you're the guy who loses, you're the one that loses the lottery and your child gets listeria and dies? And she looked at me and she had no response at all. She never thought of it that way.
Or kidney failure from the other disease, and oh my gosh, and the damage is permanent. This is something that rides with the person for the rest of their life.
So I'm going to get to one of Ashley's favorite topics. This one senses her. Is every time they stand up and go, if you discover any of these cantaloupes, turkey, or whatever the product is,
yes, forget it.
Throw it away. And Ashley goes, what do you mean throw it away? And I agree with her. If you discover anything that even looks questionable to you, take it back to the market or the store and give it to them. For one, they should know. Number two, Americans consumers should not bear the loss for this negligent industry who doesn't give a damn about them. If anyone's going to bear the loss from bad cantaloupe, bad turkey burger, et cetera, it should be the manufacturers, not the consumers. So why does the FDA and CDC and all these other people say, oh, throw it away? You know why? Because they're protecting the companies who don't want to take a financial loss of taking it back.
I saw that this morning with this lettuce recall. Official line is, you know, if your lettuce has, you know, this lot number on it, don't eat it, just toss it in the garbage. And, you know, and this bothers me because people don't have a huge amount of money. You know, they can't throw things away.
Nobody can right now, Simon. I mean, look at us. We were in our storage. Nobody can throw anything away.
When you say that, one of the ones that cracks me up is this, if it has a slot number. I mean, you know, what is this, a concentration camp? You go to the market, you look at your lettuce, and it's got a number tattooed on it? I mean, when have you ever seen a lot number on a head of lettuce you buy?
Right. You don't.
Didn't even know they have lot numbers for lettuce. And I spent a lot of time in the industry and worked in the restaurants all my life. I never had anybody come and go, I'm going to sell you 5 cases of lot number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of lettuce for you. You'd go, huh? What are you talking about? You know?
Okay.
They're pulling it out. It's got that brand on it, right, Simon?
Right. But here's the bigger problem. This lettuce recall. 3,000 cases. 3,000 cases of lettuce. It sounds a big number. But this recall affects 19 states and 2 Canadian provinces. And, you know, do the math. That's approximately 150 cases, you know, per state. And 150 cases of lettuce, I'm sure, couldn't supply more than 6 large supermarkets for a few days.
Well, Simon, I live in Los Angeles. There may not be 3,000 markets in Los Angeles, but it sure seems like it sometimes. I mean, you know, there's some areas where, you know, it could have gone into one area completely and not multiple areas. But, you know, this is one of the problems with food recalls is they don't have a clue. They don't know where they send stuff. So they got a shotgun. So you may live in an area that's subject to recall, but the reality is the lettuce may not have gone there because they just don't have any way of telling. It's just ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous. I look at the price at the gas pump, I realized that it must cost companies a great deal of money to ship stuff, you know, from one side of the country to the other. Why don't they just sell in a small regional market?
Yeah, well, isn't that one of the point of the people in the organics? Is your food gets there quicker, you know its source, you know its condition, you have some relationship with it. I mean, it's not the kind that you want, but the reality is
it's closer to the earth, so therefore you have more enzymes and more nutritional value in it. It's not dead food.
And I'll give you an example. When we pull things out of our garden, and, you know, our organic garden.
In pots.
But the bottom line is they live a long, long time. In your refrigerator, you know, sometimes you buy stuff in the market. If you don't use the next few days, it'll spoil. But when it's organic and it comes out of your garden, you realize, oh, my goodness, you know, this stuff just goes on a long, long time. So that, to me, is one of the big differences also, is that it takes so long to get food to the market, it has a shorter shelf life.
Right, but I still maintain, you know, it would be more cost-effective, a lot less effort on, you know, the entire global warming thing. If you grow it in an area, sell it in the area. Don't ship it across the country.
I don't know how anyone could ever, ever argue with that concept. And yet, American industry doesn't even consider it or won't consider it. I haven't figured out whether they're just stupid or they have some agenda that's not obvious to the rest of us. It's really hard to figure it out.
And don't you think it's the reduction of the farmers to them, Annie, the reduction of the organic farmers with all that's been going on with the corporations who have taken over with these big factory farms, these big Monsanto farms? There's, you know, less actual organic farmers, so you can't even pick your go have it delivered where it's going to be right there.
Well, no, I think it has more to do with the fact that, first of all, if people like Cargill not only grow the food and sell the seeds and do everything else, but they also distribute much of the product. So most of the farmers let go of their product, and they don't really know where it's going, and some of them in the end probably don't care except for real legitimate, you know, farmers. But no, I think the problem in the industry is the total lack of direction and understanding where your product goes and the apathy towards it. You know, Simon, do you disagree with it? I mean, if they truly cared, they wouldn't deal with some of the things they do.
Right. It is a don't care attitude. You know, I'm just part of the food chain. Where my product goes after I've grown it, I honestly don't care. And, you know, Jensen Farms, good example. 1.5 million cantaloupes. I think that was the estimate
right.
of their crop. Okay, 1.5 million cantaloupes sounds a lot, but I'll tell you what, I'll just bet that you could sell those cantaloupes in a relatively small, and I use that term advisedly, yeah, but a relatively small area. I can't believe that it should involve more than 3, 4, maybe 5 states.
Simon, let me come back to my example. We have 10 million people in L.A. County, 5 million in Orange County. There's 15 million people, so how far do 1 million cantaloupe go in this area? Not very far,
exactly.
Do they?
No, that's exactly my point.
And Ashley points out all the time to me, when you walk into a market, what's the first thing you find by the door, Ashley?
The fruits and vegetables.
So they've got those things out there, and they're doing the best to get rid of those cantaloupe before you even get to your cart. So the fact is they're not hidden under a bushel. They push them like crazy.
And Simon, I think if there was a way to, because one of the things they continually say is that there's so much problem with the cleanliness of the places. And if you had organic farmers and the farmers working within each state, and the state actually supported that, or the government supported it, then you would have better safety because you would have better monitoring, you'd have better clean facilities. You could hire locally, which means that you'd be bringing jobs into the neighborhoods. And I actually think it would be a much better method of maybe reducing some of this problem. But it also begins in D.C. Congress Rosa DeLauro yesterday attacked House John Boehner, who has been pushing to seek federal food safety program cuts. And so she stood up and she said, well, there was another recall in Ohio. That's from his state. People have become very, very ill. The meat tested positive for this E. coli. It was a recall, approximately 131,300 pounds of Tyson fresh meats from Kansas City was yanked. So here you have right in his state where people are going to become very ill, and she comes out and she says, why is it now? This latest recall should serve as a wake-up call for Speaker Boehner and all the Republicans that food safety is an issue that affects all Americans and we must take action. The safety of American consumers should be a priority. She urges Republican colleagues to recognize the seriousness of the issue, ensuring USDA, FDA to support and protect our food supply. It literally is a matter of life and death. And she's right. If we're starting to do all these cuts, and more cuts happened again this summer, where they're cutting out food safety and food regulation, and you've got people like Bachman standing in her high heels, knee-deep in slaughterhouse blood and bacteria, ooh, how are we going to keep our stuff safe?
Well, Michelle Bachman?
I mean, she's a fine example. So is Boehner. I mean, he's just a mouthpiece for all these corporations.
You're being kind to him. He's not even that good. I think he's simply one of the most misguided men I've ever watched. But I consider a lot of the Ohio politicians like that. I just don't know where they get what they consider to be the truth about life from. All their interest is to cut, slash, destroy, and make sure those poor people don't get anything. Because I don't care what Boehner says. He's a racist. He is, and everybody I've ever dealt with in that Ohio atmosphere are basically racist. Oh. And you know, Ashley, they can all call in and complain. I've got a lot of years' experience in doing business and dealing with people in Ohio, including your family, who would leave a lot to be desired. And the fact that most...
I know, I'm not saying a word, Simon.
Because you feel the same way. But the fact is, every client I've had in Ohio is now in a federal prison for dishonesty, and everybody around them were dishonest. In some cases, there were several hundred employees within their own corporations who knew they were defrauding millions, and in one case, billions of dollars from Americans, including a scandal as bad, if not worse, than Bernie Madoff, and nobody cared as long as they got their check, because guess what? Those Republicans, and by the way, this is a company who led airplanes to George Bush, who basically protected them for a long time. So, you know, if you're in Ohio and you're a Republican, don't worry. There's someone in Washington who's going to try to protect you. So all you listeners in Ohio that are offended, pick up the phone and call me up and complain, because I've got a lot of experience in what goes on there.
Well, I didn't mean to go there.
Ashley, I do have the ability to accidentally drop drop Manny's call.
You know what? That's the beauty of America. We all have the liberty and the ability to say what we're permitted to do that in this country. And I'm upset though with what's happening in D.C. with the fact that food safety is a matter of life and death. This is, people are dying. People are losing kidneys, and they're going into the hospital, and it's costing billions of dollars. So let's cut out $100 million over here for food safety to keep people protected so we can spend $100 billion on drugs and hospitalization and everything else, and death.
And all those people who are dying from all these things, well, they're just getting away with in the way of corporate profits.
I just find it sad. It's, you know, human loss is just so sad to me.
Yeah, well, it's the lack of caring for humans that causes me to go on this rant.
Right, and Boehner should not protect lack of food safety. He needs to find a different area or go move someplace else. I just, you know, you can't keep protecting people who are not going to protect human beings.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, you know, I'm not much of a political animal, but I think that the ideas being floated around to, you know, basically get rid of the FDA, the EPA, the USDA, these aren't terribly well thought out.
Was Michelle Bachmann wearing her Jimmy Choo's when she
and EPA, they'll never get rid of because it's not doing its own studies. Instead, they're evaluating information from others. So here they are having their data, which is coming from agricultural chemistry industry. It's part of a registration review program. Its entire exam is going after, you know, it examines and registers everything over the last 15 years, including pesticides. So here this chemical industry goes in and says, here's my test. Here you go. Oops, I forgot to test reproductive organs, but don't worry about it. We'll eventually get to that. We'll eventually get to cancer. But, you know, so EPA will never go away.
Simon, I think we've laid the groundwork for our next story, which incorporates everything we said. We're going to come back to all of that while we talk about the next one. The other night, Ash and I turned the news on, and here was a CBS story, even slightly high blood pressure may raise stroke risk. And then I read maybe seven different versions of this story and tried to go through the tests and things that they did. And what they came up with in this study found that middle-aged people with blood pressure that's only slightly above normal, and they call this pre-hypertension, are 68% more likely to have a stroke than those with normal blood pressure. So, you know, here they are saying that if your blood pressure, and they pegged this between, I believe it was 120 and 140, and 80 and 89. So if your blood pressure is 130 over 89, you have a 68% more chance of having a stroke. And that they say that an estimated 31% of Americans have fallen into this category, which would be basically what, 115 million Americans, which means that out of them, 68% are going to have a stroke, which is about 70 million. This sounds horrendous. It's enough to make you run to the doctor. So if you run to the doctor and he says you're pre-hypertensive, and you're pre-hypertensive for 6 or 7 months, they're going to prescribe you drugs. So it's all of our feeling this whole thing is an episode to increase more drugs. But before we get to that bottom line, we're going to discuss our journey. Right, Simon?
Absolutely.
And I'm going to start it with the math, you know, and I always love to say, do the math. Well, 143,000 approximately, make it 150,000 people die each year from stroke in the U.S. It's a leading cause of serious and long-term disability. But that 143,000, that means a million people in the last decade, which is probably a little bit less, have died of a stroke, 1.4 million. And yet they're saying that 68 to 70 million are going to die from a stroke in this middle-aged group with no stats to back it up. This is probably the most manipulative and worst use of statistics I've ever seen. Simon, I tried to run this on my adding machine. I took the 143,000 people, divided by the almost 350 million people in the U.S., and it went beyond the fourth decimal point, and my computer wouldn't even tell me what percentage it was. It's so low.
But it sells pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still stuck on the CBS. I'm still back stuck where they say your top number, which was always 120 over 80, okay, the top number, should be 120 to 139. Okay, 120 to 139, you are pre-hypertensive now. Where did this come from? Then the low number, which, of course, is always over 80, that's been your normal, between 80 to 89 is now pre-hypertensive. I mean, this reminds me of the diabetic blood sugar numbers that they started messing with and lowering and lowering and lowering so that more and more people are now getting diabetic medicine.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was going through my mind.
Seriously, doesn't it sound like the same regime?
Yes, it does. Okay, we need to sell more drugs, so let's give the politicos some more money and get them to declare that, recent studies show that we need to change the numbers. Nah, bull. I mean, all they're doing is selling more drugs.
Well, let's hit some of the ones that that really bother me. And let's all take a little journey, and because this is happens and happens to every one of us. You know, you got a doctor's appointment, you haven't been feeling well, and maybe it's your annual physical, or maybe you're just going to the doctor today. So you got a busy day, and, you know, any day you got to go see a doctor or anyone else, the S hits the fan, right? So you got everybody running around your desk, you got problems, so you got a 3 o'clock a doctor's appointment, you don't get time to try to finish all your work, and the average American tends to eat a late lunch, which is the worst thing for their blood sugar and their blood pressure. So here they are suddenly going, I got a 3 o'clock doctor's appointment, I'm late, everything's going wrong. So what do? They drive through a fast food restaurant on the way to the doctor to make sure they get something in their stomach. So their phone's ringing all the way to the doctor with some kind of office problem. You know, nothing ever goes easily on those days. Then all of a sudden, they get there and they find, the doctor's been in the hospital all morning, he's running a little late, he'll be in a little while, don't worry, just sit down and relax. Well, how do you sit down and relax in a doctor's office with people sick around you, everything's going on, your phone's ringing from the office, and everybody's going, where are you? We can't do without you. We all know the drill. So here you are in this situation, and so you're sitting there. So in comes the doctor with a big smile. He's late, doesn't give a shit, and couldn't care less. He's late, and probably because he talked to his girlfriend too long along the way, so he's now another half an hour late because of whatever his personal problems are. And believe me, I've seen this for 30 years of being a lawyer with doctors. So they come in, and people waiting. I know doctors where people wait as much as 5 or 6 hours because they don't want to see another doctor. So after all of this wait, they're now ushered into office. They sit down, and the doctor takes their blood pressure and goes, your blood pressure's up. Well, of course it is. I mean, can you imagine it not being up under those circumstances, for God's sake? Of course it's up. So
actually, that reminds me of a great story from it was the early 1980s. I'd been employed by this company, and they had a great benefit package, but I had to go get checked out. So they cuffed me. Not like the cops, but
in that moment you can't get out of it, though.
Right.
You're locked in.
Right, and the nurse says, your blood pressure's slightly elevated. And excuse my French here. I said, yeah, no effing, shit. It's up. I just closed on buying a house, and the papers were signed about 2 hours ago. She went, okay.
I know. It goes like that, Simon. But the point is that people, you know, don't necessarily have the health conditions that people attribute to them when they go to the doctor's office. And the same is true with blood tests. I tell the story often about, you know, how late one day my doctor looked at it and said, God, you got, you know, your blood test's horrible. I said, of course it was. I had lunch just before I got here. What do you expect my blood to look like? You know, it shows whatever was in your meal. Because unless you do it fasting, you're going to get an odd blood test. So how do you tell your patient, oh, come in at 2:30 in the afternoon, but I don't want you to eat all day. So, you know, so it just, what they're saying and doing are not realistic, nor are they honest. And what happens is the doctors don't care or think about it. And as you know, in our books, we push charting that people should, and our suggestion to people is, how do you deal with this? Very easily. What you do is you basically sit there for a month before you can see the doctor, and you take your blood pressure twice a day. When you first get up out in the morning and put the blood pressure cuff, they're only $30 at any good store, and put it in
I'll bet you buy them on eBay cheaper. I bet you can even buy used one cheap.
Well, yeah, but people usually don't give them up. But anyway, make a long story short, you know, and take it and chart it. So when you go in the doctor and they say, we're going to deal with your blood pressure, go, well, here's a list. And if you rely on him to do it, guess what? You're going to have a problem because he's going to take whatever he gets on that given day, and that's to him who you are. You're that blood pressure that sees in front of you. The same way you're that blood test that comes back after you've just had a fat burger or some other hamburger on your way back, on your way to the doctor's office. So, I've never seen doctors tell patients that they need to show up for a fasting blood pressure. They don't do that anymore. In my youth, but even into the 70s, almost every doctor I knew, I could hear them while I was in the office saying to patients, you know, have you been fasting before your test? And we go, no. They go, well, then you got to come back in the morning and take your test when you're fasting. But you don't hear that anymore because no one wants to take the time. And a lot of people go, I got a job. I can't come back here in the morning. What do you want?
Right. And the other issue is a straight economic one. Doctor wants to have as many patients during the day as he possibly can, and he doesn't want 27 of them turning up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, usually they don't care, Simon, because they're not there. You know, they usually, if you're there, they leave what I call orders, instructions to the nurses on how to do it, or what specifically they want from a test. But they aren't there. They don't really care. But the problem is most people don't have time before work, especially in a big city like Los Angeles, to drive cross town to go leave some type of specimen. And in regard to the blood pressure, then, for you to rush in the morning to go over to have your blood pressure taken, forget about it. And by the way, I think that every doctor I've ever known deeply appreciates patients who come in and bring this kind of information. Most of them jump for joy, and I think you had that experience too, Simon.
Indeed. My wife doesn't tend to pay much heed to what I say, but apparently some of it rubbed off. She had to go to the doctor's about a week ago or so, and she had been charting things, and she walked in because it was a new doctor, and she presented him with two or three sheets of paper that not only had a very brief history of her medical history, but, you know, exactly what was going on, et cetera, et cetera. He read it, he looked at her, smiled, and said, boy, I wish all of my patients would do that. I mean, this makes my life so much easier.
And it does.
It absolutely does. because it gives them a picture, a total picture, as opposed to, like Manny's saying, you haven't just run in from the office and, you know, you had this horrible greasy burger and you're now got this upset stomach and your blood pressure's up and you've got a headache and, you know, all the other things that go with that, that particular day. It's not a day picture. It's a totality picture.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with medicine right now is that doctors aren't getting a total picture of the health of their patients, and they're not taking the time. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I remember the film. Remember the film Doc Hollywood, where Michael Fox is a doctor who gets trapped in a small town, and he has to practice medicine instead of going to Beverly Hills and being a plastic surgeon. And one of the comments on that is know your patients, because in the old days, doctors may not have had all the tools that they have today, but they saw their patients walking around every day in their daily life. They could measure their step. They could measure how they looked, how they felt, the whole number. So at the end of the day, what they may have lacked in other fundamental terms, they gained an observation. So at the end of the day, you have a situation where sometimes observation is more important than other choices, right?
Right. And this whole blood pressure business, basically, just having one sample taken, you know, when you go to the doctor, it is a bit like running a straw poll on who's going to be the next president. I mean,
that's a good description.
Right. I mean, it's statistically not very accurate. Much better if you've got, you know, 2 weeks worth of information, you know, morning, afternoon. It gives a much wider picture.
Oh,
absolutely. And, you know, Simon, one of the things that bothered me about the CBS report also was I started going back in, looking at other numbers and stats and trying to figure out how in the world are they coming up with this 120 over 80, which is normal, could be pre-hypertensive. And they did another study, and they said 112 over 64 was found to be the normal value. Of course, they don't list age. They don't list gender. They don't list all the things that are influencing that particular normal. And age is going to have an impact. And when you're talking about the blood, let's just go back for 2 seconds with blood pressure. It measures the force that's applied to the walls of your blood vessels, and it's as your heart's pumping through the body. And your whole circulatory system has 60,000 miles to go through, large amount of pressure going through the whole body. Now, as Manny said, you go to that doctor, and you've just had a burger. Burger's filled with MSG. One of the things that affects the blood pressure is MSG, because it affects what you call, the blood pressure is run by what they call an autonomic nervous system. It's an on and off switch, automatic, don't have to think about it. It's just there. It's part of your nervous system. What do you think part of that burger bothered? It bothered the switch in your hypothalamus, and it's going to cause you to have high blood pressure. It also is going to be toxic. And you're now going to have toxic things affecting the kidneys, and you're going to have lots of salt and aluminum that you can't eliminate. You're going to have lots of elements within your blood and your body that you can't regulate at all, because that's part of that horrible burger that you just had, along with the ammonia. So it's going to cause your, what they call adrenal cortex, and it's going to cause the kidneys, and it's going to cause that whole area, pump, 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 the heart's going through all those miles to do, and you can't get it through the kidneys, and guess what? High blood pressure. So there's 2 strikes against you heading towards a stroke. You know, and you could go through your whole body doing it this way. And diabetics, the same way, blood pressure, can't squirt enough of that insulin out while it's working on the brain with the MSG and pumping through the kidneys and, oh, pump, 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 there's 60,000 miles I got to go. And you got inflammation going on. So you got this whole thing going on that's going to cause you to be possibly one of the 40. Every 40 seconds someone in the United States has a stroke, you might be one of them. If you have that and then you go in and that's what you're going to check on with your blood pressure. And that's why part of this testing and examining every day, and with that exam, you write down what you ate. I had this for breakfast and I checked my blood pressure. I had that for lunch, check it again. See how you're doing throughout the day and how that food affects your body. it's measured through. That's 60,000 beautiful miles you have, pumping, pumping, pumping.
Wow, it's hard to follow that, isn't it? Because that's the bottom line. And the other one, too, is my doctor pointed out to me many, many years ago, and it's stuck in my mind, that your blood pressure is highest between 4 or 5 in the afternoon and sunset. And that's one of the reasons why he taught me to take my blood pressure around between 4 and 6 o'clock in the evening, because to judge by what it would be at worst-case scenario. So to a great extent, I learned the circumstances under which my blood pressure were higher, and all you can do is basically I would just go, okay, time for me to lay down, take a 5-10 minute break in the afternoon. But I don't care who you are. Your blood pressure is up late in the afternoon unless you don't work for a living. And if you don't, and even a lot of people that occurs to naturally, as I said, as you get closer to sunset. So I don't hear doctors ever talk to their patients, and I ask doctor friends of mine all the time about this, about that particular issue, about the fact that the time of day they appear there, you know, causes, and they go, well, they say to me, quote, it's just too technical for the average citizen. And I go, what do you mean it's too technical?
Was that technical, what I just described, Manny? Because that's basically what's happening in the body.
Well,
and I think if people understood it that way, it's not that technical.
No, I don't think it's that technical either. Do you, Simon?
No, not at all. But apparently doctors feel that doing it in the mornings and afternoons is way too technical.
I just don't, they don't have...
And the blood pressure cuffs, you throw a battery in it, you put the cuff on, you hit a button, these little cheapy little things you buy at the market, it's like, boom, and next thing you know, you've got your blood pressure and your pulse are done. And you don't even have to work at it. You don't need a stethoscope. You don't need anything. Just a simple, cheesy little piece of equipment.
Yeah. And cheesy is the operative word.
I know. You know, but it works.
I love it. But yeah, and therein lies the problem. But it comes back to what we're talking about in the very beginning here. The solution throughout the industry is to scare everybody and tell them, don't worry, we have a drug coming.
Oh, my gosh, Mandy, if they start saying 112 over 64, because it looks like from what I'm reading with this, that's going to be the new norm, which is, of course, okay if you're a kid or you're, you know, an athlete running every single day, 50,000 miles a day. I mean, I don't even know what gender and what they did to influence this particular average.
Well, of course. You do it with an adding machine. If X amount of people do this, then we can sell X amount of drugs. And as I point out with every one of these, by lowering these numbers to a certain level, every time they do it, they increase their opportunity to sell more drugs. There's just no other reason or basis for it. It's a decision.
It's a five-minute problem with Excel. You know,
yeah.
here's our current sales.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've ever had a five-minute problem with Excel. Usually when I have a problem with Excel, it's longer.
Oh, gosh. And you know, Manny, when I was young and I was running all the time, running, jogging, very, very young, you know, cheerleader kind of thing, when I had a blood pressure at this point, even as a kid of the 112 over 64, I was told something was wrong with me. So now
it was too low, right?
It was too low. Now they're saying this is going to be the new norm. Oh, my gosh. You're going to have people falling down or taking drug, even though it has, 50 to however many side effects, you know, including impotence. So, well.
Ah!
And the only good drug that I think is out there, this is a good drug, I think, and if a person has a stroke, which is horrible, horrible, horrible thing, there's a time limit, and they keep changing that time limit, so I would advise anybody to look up in the Internet. It's called the stroke drug, and it'll tell you what the drug is. It'll describe it to you so that if you or any of your relatives have a stroke, you know about this drug. Because the sooner you get to the hospital, the sooner that person gets in and gets examined, the sooner you find out which type, because there's three different types of strokes. This one particular stroke, which has the largest percentage, which is 87% of the people who have stroke have this particular thing, can get this drug, and there is a marked improvement after the stroke. So you don't, they don't have the, a lot of the crippling effects that happen if you don't receive the drug. So it's one of the few drugs that if you have the horror of this stroke, then at least take care of your relatives, get them to the emergency room immediately, and even pre-check. Pre-check to make sure your emergency rooms, which ones, especially if you have elderly in your family, which ones actually in your family or in your neighborhood have that particular drug.
Without getting into a huge technical area.
Right, because I'm not ready to do that.
Right.
I'm taking a nap today. I'm still in storage.
Right. What is a stroke?
It's an ischemic effect that affects part of the brain. And
let's do it a little differently. Strokes are caused by a blockage in a key artery providing blood to the human brain that causes the brain to suffer from a lack of oxygen. And ultimately, that lack of oxygen causes damage to the brain in a way that hampers speech and a wide variety of other things later.
Blood clotting, clotting of like your main vessels in the brain, and it causes a dead area in the brain because that area of the brain doesn't get enough oxygen. So the lack of oxygen then causes us to, whatever area it is within that brain, and that area controls that part of the body, that part is going to be affected.
And that's one of the reasons why it's a big item, because people who are prone to having heart disease problems with blockages, frequently it's a blockage caused by too much plaque in the vein, hardening of the arteries. There's a million different causes.
Right, there's a different one that will cause actual hemorrhaging within the brain, mm-hmm. which is 10% of the brains will have that. Brain will have that, and another. There's two different types of hemorrhaging that will occur, which is not the one you can get the drug with, and it's not a good thing.
One of the things that bothers me about this whole conversation is that there's no discussion about the effects of like alcohol, which is a major contributor to strokes. When I was younger, and I've not seen stats in my adult years, that there was a direct correlation with people who drank too much alcohol and strokes. That may no longer be a problem, but it was a problem many, many years ago.
It still causes inflammation in the brain, though, and that's one of the things that causes the circulatory system to clamp down, close down, cut off, and cause inflammation in the brain that will cause an ischemic attack.
Right, but still, the fact is that people who drink a lot of alcohol tend to be more subject to this than
yes.
people who don't. And
yes.
it's really that simple.
Yes.
So that's something else to consider all this. But the real issue...
Smoking is the number one big issue.
Absolutely. But the bottom line to all of this isn't so much the disease itself, because Simon just wanted a quick comment about it, is the fact that all of these solutions that are being offered are drug-related solutions, and the solution to this would be something we've discussed. First of all, stop eating genetically modified foods. Stop eating junk food. Stop eating fast food. Stop
pesticides.
Eating,
you can stay away from your conventional food with pesticides.
And it's about intolerance. It's about the foods that you eat that your body can't tolerate. So at the end of the day, what happens is you have intolerance. So if you're intolerant to food, then guess what? It's going to cause inflammation, and that inflammation is going to slowly but surely lead to such issues as heart conditions.
And strokes. And it builds up in the body. All these chemicals build up. Because what starts out to be a safe tiny little amount, FDA says, oh, this tiny little drop's okay. It turns out to be a big amount because it keeps building up in your body because you keep eating the same food. Over and over and over, that gives you the intolerance.
And Simon, you know, this is something we repeat probably ad nauseum, but, you know, well, I always use Hungry Man because it's such a joyous one to pick on. But, you know, when you're serving foods with 150 chemical ingredients in it, gee, I wonder why strokes are up. When they say that, you know, blood pressure is a cause of the increase in strokes, I go, no, look at the food that people eat. That's a far greater cause than raising or lowering your blood pressure, and guess what? If you give up fast foods, your blood pressure will go down, as well as a variety of other things. And
absolutely, for all the reasons we talked about, with the MSG to the brain and the kidneys and the various organs, it's going to reduce your blood pressure.
Oh yeah, and there's the old movie on Super Size Me about McDonald's and how we gained 25 pounds in a month. His blood pressure went crazy, and his health started failing from eating fast foods at McDonald's. And McDonald's can say whatever they want. That is clearly an indictment of what they do. And, you know, it just amazes me that it doesn't stop anybody. They just keep right on eating this stuff, and the stroke numbers keep going right on up.
Every 40 seconds.
And guess what the solution is? Take more drugs. So how can you tell children to be drug-free when the rest of the time they're telling people to take drugs? You know, and that was a problem in my generation, the 60s. A lot of my peer group who started getting into the drug generation, I said, why are you doing this? I go, what's the big deal? My parents take drugs. I mean, just go look at their, you know, the medicine closets. And they're at the greatest, and it was true. When I was growing up, women in the 50s were taking uppers in the morning to get started, downers in the afternoon. And, I mean, it was just it was as much drug addiction in my parents' generation as it was anyway. I mean, my mother cautioned me constantly about that issue, about how many people were taking all these prescription drugs, and the women around her, she saw, took too many. And I knew a lot of people. Well, look at Julie Garland. She became drug addicted because the studio made her take drugs so she could stay thin between movies, and they just did everything to her. And there are a wide variety of other actresses throughout the years that have had drug addiction problems because the studios put drugs in them. Oh, if you're not working hard enough today, we're working till 2 a.m. Here, have some uppers. And I think that Michael Jackson's doctor used to be in the industry because that's how all this started in the first place, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it just, this country has an obsession at times with taking drugs. And it's just not this generation or the 60s generation. This is a generation. It's just an overall problem.
You know, I mean, I think part of it, too, with gets back to the pharmaceutical companies, where even during nursing college days, where the entire thing was not about, it was never about what are you going to eat to heal yourself. It was always about what drugs are we going to take. And it keeps going, and you're absolutely right. It becomes a center about, don't worry about it. You know, you're just going to eat whatever you want. You could do whatever you want because we've got a drug. We've got a drug.
Well, you know, honey, I'd love to tell a story about a friend of mine who had serious health problems, almost died from them, and I go to lunch, and he was eating, like, you know, chili verde, which, as you know, Simon, from living in San Diego, can be radioactive. And I said to him, hey, you know, you've had ulcer problems, you've had this or that. Why are you eating chili verde? I love it. And I said to him, you know, that stuff is going to tear your stomach apart. What are you doing? And he said to me, if I have to give this up, then I don't care whether I live or die. And then he starts popping a variety of different antacid drugs. I said, you do this every day time you eat? And he goes, well, yeah. I mean, the prescription drugs are supposed to stop all this. And as far as I know, I can eat whatever I want as long as I take this drug. Go, oh, okay.
And what that does is a proton pump, which blocks the enzymes, which we talked about earlier, that the body needs.
Yeah.
So you can't even, you're not even utilizing what the body needs.
I want you to know, Simon, you know what I did next? I started humming Gracie Slicks. One pill makes you larger, you know, because to me that's the mentality, you know, is, oh, I can make it go away, just give me some drugs. And they wonder why children in these generations have had difficulties with drugs when they look at what their parents have done all these years philosophically. Why should they take their parents seriously when they're taking 9, 10 drugs? My next-door neighbor's father has Alzheimer's. I hadn't spoken to him very much. The children who are, you know, he's up in years. The children are up in years. And he told me the other day that when he started to help with his father's health, the doctors had him on 39 drugs. Wow. Imagine if your kid came home from school with a note from a teacher that said, your son's taking 39 drugs. I think you need to do something about it. But it's nothing if your parents take 39 drugs if they have Alzheimer's. Who knows if he has Alzheimer's? He's so stoned.
Oh, the side effects will give him that alone. You know,
here's the real issue, at least as far as I can see. We're in a reactive situation, not proactive.
Right. and you become a prisoner within your own body. I never understood as a kid when people would say, your body is a temple. I used to say, oh, that's just such a stupid thing to think. Why do they say that? And as I've gotten older, I understand, because you're born with this house, and that's what houses everything that makes you move and live and breathe. And if you don't take care of it, you're stuck in a junk house. And you're stuck. There's nothing you can do. Unless you start cleaning up that house and you start getting rid of all the junk, you're going to be stuck in a prison, in a bad house, in a bad location, because you can't get a job because your house is no longer functioning. And then guess what? That's a really crappy temple to live in, isn't it?
Well, honey, I think you've been in the warehouse too long.
I think so, too. But one of the things I wanted to touch on, Manny, because you always say this to me. You always say, history repeats itself.
Yes, it does.
With strokes, the main thing everybody says, oh, prevent your stroke with Bayer aspirin. So I thought this morning, I'm going to look at Bayer aspirin. Now, we wrote about this a long time ago, and I thought, oh, I haven't looked at this in quite a while. So I think people should know where the propaganda of the Bayer aspirin comes from. In a wonderful company called Bayer, it was the only company in Germany to actually run one of the Nazi camp death camps.
Right.
And it was extensively using slave labor in its factories.
Jewish slave labor.
Right. It was part of the IG Farben, which was a conglomerate of the German chemical industry that formed a part of the financial core of German Nazi regime.
And it was owned primarily by Dr. Mengele's family.
Right. And it actually created the chemical that used the gas chambers of Auschwitz and other Nazi extermination camps. And then their executive, Fritz Demirer, was sentenced to 7 years in prison by this Nuremberg war crime tribunal, got out, became supervisor of Bayer in 1956. I want to read to you the aspirin that saves you stroke. This is a direct quote from this man. They were prisoners, thus no particular harm was inflicted, as they would have been killed anyway. And every time you take the poison you put in your body, I want you to think about these wonderful people at Bayer. I want you to think about the toxins and the chemicals, because they now, by the way, Bayer has put out a chemical that has, they absolutely unequivocally know this clothianidine is so highly toxic and dangerous, it's banned in Germany, France, Italy, and Slovenia, sprayed, soaked into our soy and our corn and everything else, pesticide. This is made by Bayer. This is the same company that has the same attitude that you're going to die anyway. And that, my dear, is Bayer, the Bayer company. I thought, Manny, it repeated itself. Here it is in history, known to, this is killing off all the bees. When they tested this particular product in Germany, it killed a couple hundred million bees. It's a very dangerous pesticide, and it comes on your everyday vegetables, your fruit, your corn, and it's soaked in everything.
Okay, and by the way, Americans probably don't know this, but as part of the war crimes, Bayer was stripped of all of their patents as one of their penalties for their participation in the Nazi regime. And these are ruthless, ruthless people. That they're neo-Nazis. I don't care what they say. You look at their policy, they're neo-Nazis. They basically have not changed, they have not missed a beat, and they don't care about you. And you need to take a long, hard look at some of these companies. We get on Monsanto a lot. Why not? They made dioxin. They've created napalm. They're about to go to trial in West Virginia for basically poisoning an entire town with birth defects from manufacturing dioxin. And as usual, they won't take responsibility for that. So what do we have here? We have a variety of heartless American corporations that are just basically running amok in our country, and we just cannot afford to let this go on. But I want to end this with a couple of thoughts about it. I saw a report that basically said Monsanto spent $1.7 million in the second quarter lobbying the federal government, okay? And it was too much, $2 million. And another quarter, basically about $8 million. But that's only direct lobbyists. That doesn't include their political contributions. It doesn't include contributions to all these, you know, scientific organizations that, that lobby Congress, that are really basically talking heads for the chemical industries, and a wide variety of other ways they funnel money. And now, thanks to our corrupt Supreme Court, which has been corrupted by Monsanto and others, corporations don't have to report who they make donations to anymore. So here we are with a situation where they're spending probably $30 to $50 billion a year, or $1 million a year, on Congress. And you wonder why we have gridlock in Congress. You wonder why we can't get laws passed to protect the American public. Gee whiz. Let me think. What could be the cause? Maybe bribery and all sorts of misconduct by American corporations that try and fix everything they can. Do you think that might be a reason, Simon?
Oh, no. These are fine, upstanding companies.
Only in their dreams, Simon.
And Simon, you're going to die anyway, so what the hell?
Sure.
It's nice to know you matter, doesn't it?
Yeah, just keep on shopping and eating, and we'll just feed you some aspirin after that stroke.
Right after we're done, I'm going to search the medicine cabinet, see if I can find some bear aspirin.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's terrible to find out that basically the people you buy from are basically war criminals.
And not only that, they're the ones that have found a way to get around the EPA to do their own testing. And some of them, they just said, oops, we forgot to test on some of this pesticide crop that they put on our contaminated, it's contaminated our food, off our bees.
They didn't find a way. They just bribed people. There's no other way to do it except pay off politicians with promises and money and other stuff to get any of this thing done. It's just, gee, we just really sold everybody this great policy, and we showed up and said all these wonderful things, and everything's great. And I'll tell you how bad it's getting for Monsanto. Over 50 organizations have filed various documents with the United Nations Conference asking for them to ban genetically modified foods around the world, and supplying an incredible amount of statistics on the various problems from superweeds, insects, Roundup contaminating waters, and they basically talk about how eco-friendly, basically organic food feeds 70% of the world, and they don't really need this. So, and listen to this. The market diversity and research support for small-scale farming could decrease the world feed prices by 30%, or about $9 billion annually. You know, and Monsanto's, that's all profit to Monsanto. That $9 billion is money that Monsanto's ripping off the top of our agricultural market that increases the prices of every food that you and I eat. So the next time you look at a price of your food and you're unhappy, it starts with Monsanto, and it trickles down to the farmers who buy the seed, the farmers who buy the Roundup, who then sell the genetically modified corn to the factory farms and stuff it full of animals, and to people who make high fructose corn syrup, corn solids, and all these other chemicals like maltodextrin that poison our food every day. So the bottom line to all of this is we appreciate you listening. We're going to be off until January 1 because Ash and I have such a busy schedule. But please, join the food revolution. It's simple. Read the labels, reject foods with addictive chemicals, and vote with your paycheck. Right, Ashley?
Yes, stay healthy.
And listen, have a wonderful holiday. Eat well and try not to be a statistic. And if you have to go to the doctor, take him as much information as you can, because the more information you give is the better medical advice you get. Any thoughts, Ashley?
Thank you for listening. I really appreciate you being there. If you have any questions during this time period, something comes up, something you see on the Internet that you're questioning, something that you're not sure of, we're available at www.howtoeliminatepain.com. So just write to us, and we will, Manny or I will answer.
And Simon,
I want to thank both of you for taking part today, and I do hope that we'll be able to continue surviving the 21st century in the near future till next time. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and healthy life. Goodbye.